Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends, the number one worldwide radio show. The show's outrageous and it's contagious. It will lift your spirits high, you'll feel that you can fly. Transform your attitude, fill it with gratitude. Cut loose and improvise, it's coaching time today. Joyce is a great coach with an extraordinary approach. Fast on the upbeat, top of the heap. A wild motivator, great stimulator. Unstoppable in a humoristic way. Life lessons with passion, joyfully today. You want Joyce as your coach if you want this to be your best year ever.
Coach Joyce here. I want this to be your best year ever. I want this to be my best year ever. I want this to be the best year ever for Rudy Rivack, his friends and family. And we want this to be the best year ever for all our friends and families and loyal listeners worldwide.
Welcome to Joyce, Barry, and Friends. We are broadcasting live across America and around the world. This is the Hour to Empower, with stimulating talk, views you can use, memorable quotes, and powerful life lessons. We always have hot guests and cool topics. We even have cool guests and hot topics. You always want to tune us on, tune in, and tune up with us to hear the best of the best. You do not want to miss any of our shows. Each show goes into our archives. Log into Joyce Barry and Friends.com, Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E, and you will see each guest and each topic on our homepage. You can play and download any of our shows, always informative, inspiring, and motivational. You want to share these special shows with your friends, family, and contacts. You can follow us on Facebook and become a Joyce Barry subscriber and even a fan by going to our Joyce Barry and Friends fan page. Be sure to check like. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us by going to our Blog Talk Radio homepage and clicking follow right below my picture. You can also message me in any of these venues about our show, about our guests, about anything. My official website is joycebarry.com, Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E. The chat room is open. Log into the chat room, have fun, and chat away. I go back and forth into the chat room during the show to see what is going on in there. Motivation, inspiration, and an education. Positive, happy thoughts to improve your life, health, and finances. Take positive actions to create a gratifying lifestyle. Life lessons from me, your host, Joyce Barry, straight from the Coach's Corner. And then you will hear from our wonderful guest today. Folks, every day should be treated like a special day. We wish you the finest of friends, the opulence of opportunities, the magic of miracles, and the happiest of days. May this year be your best year ever.
Folks, what a great show we have today. From tragedies to triumphs with our special guest, Rudy Rivack, one of the most motivational and inspirational people I have ever known. It is said that there are few people who have the ability to visualize a goal and know how to make it happen. Rudy Rivack not only has the vision, but the ambition, the talent, and the drive to make his vision a reality for himself and for thousands of others who have made Symmetry, one of his many global companies, a part of their lives. I am proud to say it is an important part of my life. Rudy Rebeck is the chairman and founder of 5 global companies. He was born in Germany and immigrated to the U.S. in 1952, became a U.S. citizen in 1957, and served in the Army. Today, Mr. Rebeck talks about his just-released book, Iron String, which is true, and recounts the extraordinary story of his family's unimaginable suffering and eventual triumph. It highlights the dignity and resilience of the human spirit. The book is powerful and chilling, a fast-paced, gripping tale that pits two forces, that of evil and that of love, against each other. It is a chronicle of determination, persistence, faith, and courage through every challenge and obstacle. It drives home the point that love indeed conquers all. Rudy Rebeck, welcome to the show. I am so excited to introduce your book to our worldwide audience.
Well, thanks, Joyce. It's always wonderful to be on your show. I love what you do for all of the people out there through your show, helping them to gain personal development, encourage them, and it's a terrific show that you do. So thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being on and making the time, giving your five global companies, worldwide traveler extraordinaire, and all that you do, and for all those you inspire. We are absolutely delighted. I have many questions, and I want to hear your story in the mix as well. But first, I want to ask you, what prompted you to write this book?
Joyce, I was very, very, very lucky to have two terrific parents that were just loving and hardworking and just faithful, great people. I often tell people a fun thing to say, and that is that, you know, if I were to come back on Earth and God gave me the choice, he said, okay, you can have any parents you want on Earth. You can have the richest, you can have the poorest, you can have the best, whatever. If I ever had that choice, I would pick the exact same two parents because they were such great, loving people for my life. But
wow, you know, all we hear about is dysfunctional families. It's a pleasure to talk to someone who actually comes from a wonderful family.
Yeah, thank God. The life lessons they taught us by their example, not by their words, but by their examples, were amazing for my sisters and myself. They went through such challenges through their life in the early part of way before I was born, and it was so amazing to find out their story, because mostly when I was young, they didn't talk about all the discouragement through World War II and all the negative side of it. Oh, we heard some stories here and there, little things like my dad had his the finger on his right, the index finger on his right hand was missing. And you know, we said, Dad, why don't you have that finger? What happened to it? Well, you know, I was a machine gunner, and I ducked, but my finger didn't. So we'd have little stories
wow.
like that, but we never got the whole story. And so in 1993, before my dad passed, he passed in 95, before he passed, I hired somebody. They were living in Florida at the time. I hired a book writer, and not because I wanted a novel, but because I wanted just the documentation of their story for my family to pass on to my kids and grandkids and to the rest of our family. And so I hired this writer, and to make a long story short, she kind of let me down because she took my money and never really wrote the manuscript I wanted. However, one big blessing came out of it. And that is that she interviewed my mom and dad for about 30 hours. And those interviews that she did are on tape, on the old cassette tapes, real cassette tapes. And fortunately, if nothing else, I got those tapes. And I have this box of tapes that I've had since 1993. And so then, I just held on to them for all these years. And there was a little bit of a manuscript that she had done, but it was very poor. And then about 3, 4, 5 years ago, about 4 years ago, I was at an event, a convention, and one of the people I've known for years who does big events, puts on seminars and so on, and he came up to me and he said, "Hey, Rudy, I'm retiring, and one of the things I want to do in my retirement is I want to write, and I would like to write your story," meaning my business story. And I said, "Jim," I said, "no, I don't want you to write my business story, but I do have something you can write for me." And I sent him, he lives in Ohio, I sent him the tapes, this box of tapes, and the short manuscript that was put together. And he did a very, very good job of researching and putting together the manuscript, and documenting all of this information, putting the timelines correct, listening to all these 30 tapes, did a good job of making a manuscript, which I like. And I held on to it. And then 2 years ago, I moved here to Houston. I met a wonderful lady, name is Pamela Triolo, who has also written a couple of medical mystery novels because she was the head nurse of Methodist Hospital here in Houston. And so when she retired, she decided to write and wrote two great medical mystery novels. Actually, if anybody on this show would like to look that up, her name is Triolo. And if they like medical mystery novels, she's done a good job. One day we were just talking, we became friends, and we were talking about this book, and she got all excited about helping me to write it and turn it into a novel to publish so that the story and the inspirational message that it provides could be shared with many, many, many more people. As a matter of fact, she is so excited about it, she's now pushing it to try to make it a movie. So that's how it
awesome.
Came about. That's how Iron String wound up being published this January.
Do you have it? That's very exciting. Do you have in your head who you'd love to see play these parts? Your parents, you? Do you have somebody in your head?
No, I do not. That's funny because that's exactly what she's asking all the time. Who do you see wanting to play this? No, I have no idea. I'm not that big of a movie person I don't even know the names. I see faces of when I go to movies and so on, and I recognize, but I don't know their names or anything. That's not my area. So.
Oh, that's funny, because that would be the first thing I'd want to know. As you wrote this, did you have a vision of, wow, if this becomes a movie, this is who I'd want to play the part? I want to go back to the title. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "Trust thyself. Every heart vibrates to that iron string." The title of the book is Iron String. What about that had you particularly resonate with that, such that you chose that title?
It's actually my wife Pam is the one who came up with the title for two reasons. One, because of what Ralph Waldo Emerson said, and that is that every heart beats to this iron string. This thing that holds them together, that pushes them through life. But the other part of the iron string is this iron string concept that holds families together. That even though my mom and dad were apart in the war, thousands of miles apart at points, going in different directions, having tremendous challenges on both sides while he was in the war. And they were having to flee from the Russians, my family, that iron string that kept them together as a family, that tied them together, whether you call it love or there's some spiritual connection or whatever it is, but there's this iron string that ties people together that are committed to each other no matter what. And that's what my parents were. They were committed to each other and tied together through this iron string.
Well, it definitely
so
is a no matter what book, given all the tragedies, all that you all face, it certainly was that. How long in total did it take you to have this book written? I heard you had three people, one after the other, working with you on this project. I'm wondering why the first one left. She was onto something. I come from Everything Happens for a Reason, and the reason ultimately is a good one. So how long was it in total that this happened?
Well, again, I started in 1993, and the First Lady Renee took about 8 months, maybe a year, to get all these tapes, because it was over a period of time that she did the interviews, all the interviews, and then put together a short manuscript. Then Jim took another, he took about 8 months or a year, and what he did was he connected a lot of the dots, especially through the military years for my dad, of where he was, because on the tapes he would talk about being outside of Stalingrad and dying in the snow, people around him dying in the snow, freezing to death. The German soldiers at the end of the war had no boots to wear. They were wearing rags on their feet. So Jim would go in and he researched, well, what battle was that? And came up with the exact dates of the battle and where that was and exactly what area he was in. And then the third step was when Pamela took it and she researched all of the timeline for my mom and my sisters and my grandparents who had to flee from Hungary, Romania and escape from the Russians because the Russians were taking over. So she detailed all of that journey of these people from this little town of Scheindorf and the many refugees who had to flee. She did that research. And then, more importantly, she put this story together to put the heart into the story. So it isn't just a manuscript. It's a live, living story that, as most of my friends say who've read it and people I know, they say, I can't put it down. I have to keep reading it. I can't put the book down. Many of them have read it in 1 or 2 days because they just couldn't put it down.
It does make for that kind of reading, and it's so inspirational. And what was the hardest part of getting it on paper? What was the hardest part of writing it?
Just the timeline, because Pamela did such a good job with me of writing the book, talking about making sure that it was a good story and it flowed. But one of the hardest parts for me was that a lot of this information, even though, like I said, I had heard some of it, I didn't know all of it. You know, like when you first start reading the book, you'll see that what happened was my grandpa, after World War One, World War One, 1917, so it was about early 1920s, he came to America from the place where they were, which was called a little town of Scheindorf in Hungary, Romania. And the reason I say Hungary, Romania is because they were on the border and this town kept changing hands. It's kind of interesting because when my dad was born, it belonged to Romania. When my mom was born, it belonged to Hungary. When my oldest sister was born, it belonged to Hungary. And when my youngest sister was born, it belonged to Romania again. So my parents were born in two different countries in the same town. But my grandpa left this town of Scheindorf after World War One to come to America, and he worked in a factory in Passaic, New Jersey, in a leather factory, and sent money home. And the goal was that they wanted to get enough money to bring the whole family and move to the United States, hopefully. Well, when he was sending this money home to Hungary, Romania, my dad was a 7-year-old boy. And he took this money and he worked the farm and built the farm and bought land and bought horses. And this young boy would go out all day at 7 years old and plow the fields, mow the fields, mow the hay, take care of the chickens, take care of the pigs, take care of the cows at 7 years old. And so while I'm reading the book myself, I get tears in my eyes because I'm thinking of my little grandson, Kai, who's now 8 years old. And I'm thinking of him having to go out in the fields all day long and work. And my grandma at that time was an alcoholic. Now, there's a lot of excuses we kind of make throughout the book for why she was an alcoholic, you know, because her husband was in America and not home and she had this farm to work on. But she didn't have much. She didn't help my dad very much. He was a young boy and he's taking care of this farm. Fortunately, neighbors helped and relatives helped, but it's an amazing story that he could even do that at 7 years old. I think that's one of the most emotional things that happened to me, was putting my life today, trying to relate it to what was going on then.
Well, when I ask that question, it's clearly a spiritual journey. So when you had to go back and recount those horrific experiences, what you, what your family went through, I would imagine it was very, very difficult, very, very emotional.
Yes, yes, constantly. And to think of what my mom had to go through as this young woman, and my sisters, I have to go through almost the whole story, but when my grandpa then couldn't come to the United States, what eventually happened was that the United States stopped immigration just before World War II, and so my grandpa was in the States. Well, he was sending this money home, but then they couldn't use the money to come to America because America stopped immigration. They didn't allow any more people in, kind of what's being talked about now, but they just put a blanket stop on immigration. So my grandpa went back to Hungary, and he became the mayor of this little town because he would send home this money. American dollars were so valuable. My grandma and my dad, who was, again, this young boy, had bought all his land and horses with this American money, so they were kind of rich. Because in those days, money wasn't wealth. It was all having land and horses was wealth. And so when my grandpa went back, he wound up becoming the mayor of this little town, and they had a pretty successful life going. And then, of course, here comes World War II, the tragedy of World War II and what Hitler did, and the horrible, awful times that caused for them. And now they thought at the beginning they were kind of safe, because they were in Hungary, Romania, but as Hitler moved east and took over countries, Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Romania, as he took those over, each one of those, these men, these young men in these towns would wind up becoming soldiers, not because they wanted to, because they were forced to. And this was actually these young men who were in these other countries were the fodder that Hitler used to put out on the front lines as they went into Russia, and as they continued to fight, these young men were the fodder that Hitler just put on the front lines to let them die as they were moving forward. Well, one of the negative parts of that, as I wrote the book and involved in it, one of the biggest negative parts was, because I spent a year in Vietnam, I was in the military, but you know, all the people I served with were people who were strangers to me when I went in. Well, my dad, when he was in the military, when they took all these soldiers, these young men from this town, the Germans would make this whole town a platoon, kind of. So the people who were around my dad when they were on the Russian front dying, the people who were dying were young guys who were with him, who were his friends, who grew up with him, that he had to watch die. And so, man, that's so emotional to have to read about that and think about what my poor dad had to go through at that time.
I can't even imagine, you know, what that was like. It is so beyond even the scope of imagination when you're living in a free country. But as you know, immigration is very much in the forefront of the news now. How is immigration different in those days than it is showing up today?
Well, yeah, that's a real challenge. When I hear it in the news nowadays of people saying, oh, we're an immigrant nation, so everybody should be allowed to come here. Well, yes, they were immigrants in those days, and lots of them, but they were vetted very well. They came, they got in Ellis Island. Now, my family, we came in just across from Ellis Island. By then, Ellis Island was closed. But when my grandparents came here, they came through Ellis Island. They were put in quarantine, the entire family. And if any one of them was sick, that person was sent back. And either the whole family would go or that one person would have to be sent back because they didn't want diseased people in the States. The other thing that was very much different is for my family, when we came in 1952, we had to have a sponsor. In other words, someone in the United States of America who was a citizen had to say, I want to sponsor this family, the Revacs, to come to America. And by being a sponsor, they were committed now that if the REVAX didn't work, if the REVAX didn't have any food, if the REVAX didn't have any place to stay, that this sponsor was responsible to take care of them. Not the government, not any kind of welfare systems or anything. This sponsor would have to take care of this family. And so that was a huge difference.
And I never even heard of that happening. I mean, that is so interesting. I never heard reference to that at any point.
No, because they don't talk about it today. They make it sound like everybody who can, well, the doors have just been open forever. It's not true. Immigration has always been limited to only those who were coming here for the right reasons and coming here to work and would come here and take care of themselves. Today, one of the biggest problems, in my opinion, is that when people come here, legally or illegally, they open up the floodgates of welfare, of housing, of food stamps, of medical aid, of everything. Well, of course, that's attractive to people. So, but in those days, there were no freebies. Nobody got anything for free. You had to be committed to working.
Given all the emotional things that are going on in the writing of the book, recounting the book, was there any place in the book where it just flowed and it was easy to get it on paper? Because it all seems so difficult to me just in looking through it. There's so many wow moments and extraordinary moments and difficult moments. Was there anything that was easy to write?
Yeah, you know, first of all, I Pamela Triolo was the writer, and she did a great job of putting this all together and putting the stories together. But I'll tell you one of the best parts for me, and that is the positive side of the book, some of the amazing things that happened, the godsends. Let me tell you just one quick story. When, you know, I have some people that I know that say, well, there is no God and things just happen by chance. And it's, I don't believe that. Here's a good example. Well, my grandpa came after World War I and he worked in the United States. On Sundays, it was his only day off. And there was a relative nearby, an aunt that later on I called an aunt. I don't know exactly how she was related to us, but she would have Sunday lunch. And my grandpa would go over there for Sunday lunch. And at that lunch, there was a woman named Helen. And Helen was a younger girl. And she took care of a young boy who was about 7, 8 years old at that time. And my grandpa met this boy, and they would go for walks in the park and so on when he went to visit on Sundays. And this little boy would help my grandpa try to learn English. And of course, my grandpa taught him some German. So that's in about 19, whatever it is, 20 or so on, and went on for several years. So probably 3, 4 years that they knew each other. Fast forward, World War II happens. My grandpa's back in Hungary, Romania, in Scheindorf. World War II is going on. My dad is off World War II. At the end of World War II, he is captured by the Russians. And my dad escaped from being captured by the Russians. He broke out the back of an outhouse and to escape. And, you know, just like you see sometimes in movies, the story he told was they're shooting at him while he's running towards the woods after he broke the board out of the back of the outhouse and escape. And then he and other men worked their way back to Germany, back to the Allies. Well, when he was in a camp, when the Allies, after the war, took these German soldiers, they had them in camps. Well, at the very end of the war, my dad finally finds my that's another story that I hadn't told yet, so people listening think this is not very connected. The book, I promise, connects it.
Yes.
My grandma, my grandpa, my sisters, and my mom had 3 hours to load up a wagon and leave because the Russians were coming and taking over after the war was over. And when they came into these towns and they took over a town, the Russians would kill everyone of authority. They would kill the mayors, the landowners, the shop owners. They would rape the women. I mean, it was horrible what they would do, these Russians, after the when they took over these towns. And they did that because they took control. That's how they took control. If there was no one of authority alive, it was easy for them to take control of these places. Well, my parents knew that. I mean, pardon me, my grandparents knew that. And so they got on a wagon with my mom and my sisters, and they fled. They left everything they had on earth behind just to be free, to get away from the Russians. And then once they were across the Danube River in Budapest, they were with the Allies. The English, the Americans, the French. Now they were with the Allies. They were safe. And then these Allies put them in refugee camps. My parents wound up eventually down in Austria. My mom and my sisters wound up in Austria. So my dad is in Russia, captured. He escapes. He works his way back, and he finds my family, my sisters and my mom and my grandparents, in Austria. And in the refugee camp. I mean, it's just the thought of that, of having to work your way back on trains, on sneaking, getting away from not being captured again, is just amazing. Well, he works his way back, the end of the war. The Austrians don't want all these refugees, so they send them back into Germany on a train. So my mom and my dad and my sisters wind up being sent into Germany as refugees, and wound up on a farm in southern Germany, which is where I was born. Well, they decided, my grandparents, of course, because they had been to America, they had no problem coming to America. But my dad, because he had been a German soldier, not because he wanted to, that's what happened. Because he was a German soldier, he went to try to get permission to go to the United States. Had a sponsor. We had a Agabas, someone in New York who was willing to sponsor our family. But he had to get permission from the German government, that was being run at that time by the United States Army. He went, they refused, because he got put on the back of the list because he had been a German soldier. He went again. Well, he was a German soldier, back of the list. The third time he goes, he says to my mom, he says, listen, if this doesn't work, we're just staying in Germany. This is where we'll make our life. He goes back to, I think it was in Munich or Nuremberg. He goes to try to apply to come to the United States. As he walks in, there is a man sitting behind the counter, a captain, because everything was run by the U.S. military. So there's this United States captain sitting there with a team of other men who made the decision of who would come and who couldn't. And this captain says to my father, he says, Stefan Revak. He says, that's the German pronunciation of my father's name. He says, do you know someone else named Stefan Revak? And my dad says, yeah, that's my father's name is also Stefan. Uh-huh. The soldier says, was your dad ever in the United States of America? My dad says, yeah, he was there after World War I, worked in a factory in Passaic, New Jersey. Well, to make a long story short, this captain that is interviewing my dad at that minute was that little boy that my grandpa took care of on Sunday afternoons and walked in the park.
Oh, my God.
And he said to my dad, he said, Steve, you're going to America. Don't worry about it. You're going to America. Now, if, you know, talk about a godsend, these thousands and thousands of miles apart, thousands and millions of people involved, and this man is the guy who interviews my dad, who my grandpa took care of years before in Passaic, New Jersey. If it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be in America today. I wouldn't have the opportunity to be free in America. So
that is an extraordinary story. It really is. Brian Tracy said, you cannot control what happens to you, but you can control your attitude toward what happens to you. And in that, you will be mastering change rather than allowing it to master you. I wonder, how did your family find the resources to keep up a positive attitude in the face of such atrocities?
Well, Joyce, I mean, it was tough. And, you know, at that time, it wasn't just them. I mean, we're talking thousands and thousands and thousands of people who went through similar situations. World War II was horrible. World War II was just devastating on so very many people's lives. And the way they stayed positive, I for my family, it was love. And when you read through this book, the one thing that you will get out of this is there is a tremendous iron string of love that ties my mom and dad together when they're thousands of miles apart or next to each other and holding each other in their arms. You can just feel it, and it was always there. I mean, as I was growing up as a young boy, even though now we're in America, my mom and dad were so close and so tight. It was just obvious how much they loved each other deeply, and they set such a great example. So I think the only way they stayed positive, it was through all those challenges, and they had the determination. My dad had the determination he was going to get back to his wife and his family. He was going to get back to his daughters. He was going to get back to, even when he had, he got captured by some soldiers. This was after the Russians had captured. He got captured by some Czechoslovakian soldiers. They took all his clothes, left him in his underpants, walking down the street in the winter. And just horrible times. But through all of that, his determination was, I am moving. I'm going home. And, you know, it's kind of somewhat the same in today's world when I do trainings and I talk about things like desire and vision and knowing what you want. The moment you have a vision and one moment you have that determination that says, I will, then everything else seems to stand aside and let you through. You know, it was like Benjamin Disraeli, the prime minister of England. By the way, the first Jewish prime minister of England ever. Benjamin Disraeli said, nothing can resist a will that will stake even its existence on the extent of its purpose. And I always remember that quote when I saw that from Benjamin Disraeli. And that's what my dad had. Say, nothing can resist a will that will stake even its existence on the extent of its purpose. And his purpose was to get back to my mom, my two sisters, to get back to the family, to make it a family again, and nothing would stand in his way. Not the cold weather, not when he stole his clothes, not when he was captured. He just kept moving forward to make that goal, that vision that he had of being a family again. So, and that relates to today's world.
Well, that drives home the point, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And that's evidence throughout the book.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's what it did. It made him stronger. You know, we talk about it often. I do it in my trainings. Problems are blessings. When you think back in your life and you say, all the problems that you've had or challenges that you've had, once you overcome them and you look back on them, you say, wow, that was tough. But look what I learned from that. Here's what came out of that. And that's how I think God makes us stronger. That's how he makes us better, is by having these problems in our life. Now, thank God we don't have to go through problems like they went through. The people through World War I or World War II, all these horrible things that happened to them, losing their homes. But still, we have our own problems on a day-to-day basis that we think are insurmountable, and they're just not. When you think of the things or read this book and you see all the challenges and hardships and discouragements and disappointments that they overcame just to reach their dream of coming here to America, to be free, of being a family, of having freedom and opportunity. When you see all of those things that they've gone through, and then I relate that to my life, because I have a little challenge in the business or a little problem with a friend or and we think that's insurmountable, and that's just, oh, it's so horrible. Now, you need to read books like this in order to get a better perspective on how fortunate we are in today's world. As the way things
are today.
And
folks, you can find the book in hardcover, softcover, ebooks on Amazon.com. You do want to pick up your copy, Iron String, Rudy Rivack, Amazon.com. You must get this book to be inspired. And as Rudy just shared with us, when you have those, quote, insurmountable challenges and problems, you read something like this and you put things into perspective. I also humbly suggest that to get past challenges and to stay positive and upbeat in the face of all that is happening in your life and in the world around you, do listen to this show every day, and our health guru will tell you why you should in her own words, Beverly Nadler.
Listen to me. I have something to say about a wonderful way to start your day, a way to stimulate your mind and increase your energy, make you feel so good. And guess what? It's free. Weekdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, hear the Joyce, Barry, and Friends show. You'll find it on the internet, on Blog Talk Radio. This show is upbeat and fun and very inspirational. It's informative, educational, and very motivational. There's the Coach's Corner, great quotes and news. There are suggestions, perspectives, and advice you can use to enhance your life and improve your health, plus clever, simple ways to increase your wealth. Joyce's perceptions and personality will keep you captivated, and her guests from many walks of life will always keep you fascinated. When Joyce and her friends speak, it's like you're in the conversation. This is part of what makes her show so unique, really a sensation. For Joyce's friends are not only the guests you're listening to, they're everyone who is tuning in. Yes, I do mean you. So refer your friends and family. They'll be so pleased to know. And let's make Joyce, Barry, and Friends the number one internet radio show.
And folks, you can partner up with us in having that happen. Simply go to Joyce Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E, and friends.com. And right under my picture on the upper left of the homepage, it says follow. And if you click on that, you will see every show, every guest, every topic, because you will be getting an email advising you. If you can't join us when we are live at 11 a.m. Eastern, you can play or download any of our shows 24/7 in our archives. And on the homepage on the upper right, if you type in Rudy Rivack, R-E-V-A-K, all his shows will pop up. I can tell you that there were many shows, always inspirational, motivational, that you want to listen to. Great, inspiring shows. All you have to do, go to our website, put on the upper left of the homepage. So getting back to the book, Iron String, I just want to share this quote. God didn't promise days without pain, laughter without sorrow, sun without rain. But he did promise strength for the day, comfort for the tears, and light for the way. If God brings you to it, he will bring you through it. That was a quote that always motivated me. And in reading the book, you will see how this is really drives the point home, having faith, persistence, determination. What do you want to share, Rudy, about those things, faith, persistence, determination, how not only was it true for your family while they were going through all of that as put in the book, but also how that shows up in your life all the time, and it requires faith and perseverance and determination.
Yeah, that's I use those exact same things today when I do trainings for our people and personal development trainings and ask people to do better in their own personal lives on a daily basis. I mean, faith is one of the things that brings you through life. Faith in several areas. Faith in yourself. You know, in today's world, people don't believe in themselves. They don't have the confidence in themselves. They haven't, I don't know, I think maybe it's because I was very fortunate. I was raised on a farm. And on the farm, you're taught that you can. Why? Because if something breaks down, you don't call someone to fix it, you fix it. On a day-to-day basis, you have to work. You don't say, well, it's 9-to-5 job. No, the farm teaches you that, you know, hey, on Sunday, you know, and God says Sunday is the day of the Lord. It's the Lord's day. Well, he didn't tell the chickens. They still want to eat. They still want to drink. They still need to be worked on. So you have to, every single day you're working, and that work effort, that teaching of that work effort is very, very important, I think, to people. And many times today, people don't have that self-belief. And then on top of that, in today's world, you get everybody telling you, you can't. Times are bad. This is bad. That's bad. All this negative information out there. In my opinion, I think the millennials have been done a disservice by their parents of everybody getting a trophy, everybody being told how great they are when they haven't accomplished anything. Well, that's not a good example to set for life. So I think this faith in yourself, belief in yourself is very, very important. And that's established by doing. That's established by having some situations. It's established by working. That's established by having some problems and overcoming them. It's one step at a time that we learn that. So the faith is tremendously beneficial. And as I said before, faith in God, I think you have to have some kind of a belief in something greater than yourself in order to know that you can move into the future with confidence. So
absolutely. Faith is seeing
tremendous
light with your heart when all your eyes see is darkness. Voltaire said, faith consists in believing when it is beyond the power of reason to believe. And Luke 1:37, faith, it does not make things easy, it makes them possible.
And faith is a human's ability to see, look into the future, to see things that don't exist, but that's how they exist. Humans have this remarkable ability to look into the future and see things that don't yet exist. Jules Verne wrote about a submarine leads under the sea before there was ever such a thing as a submarine. Leonardo da Vinci drew pictures, have pencil sketches of helicopters that are in the archives today before there was ever anybody flying. Where did that helicopter come from? Came from his mind. And because of that faith in the future and looking into the future, we have that ability to see things that don't exist, to make them exist in our lives and in the future. So that's exciting to me. That's what drives me on.
Joyce, may I add
a little bit about the book? I'm sorry, but you mentioned
the book.
No, go
ahead, of course.
The book is on Amazon, and that is true. It's on Amazon, it's on softcover, hardcover, and you can get it as an ebook. But I want to let people know I'm not doing this for financial gain. All of the profits or proceeds from this book are going to my church missions, the Woodlands Church in Houston, Texas, who does some amazing mission work in Kenya and Honduras and Haiti. And I've been personally involved in that. I went to Kenya last year on their mission and helped out on the church mission over there. I hope to go to Honduras this year with the church mission. So any proceeds or profits that come from this book are going to the church to support this mission effort.
I definitely knew that you did not write it for the money. I knew that, but I didn't know till this moment what you had earmarked for the proceeds of the books, and that is extraordinary. What I wanted to say was, even with all these extraordinary motivating forces in life, desire, courage, determination, persistence, faith, another component that strings it all together, which one must have to persevere and get through it all, is courage. How does one muster up the courage when they're knocked down and knocked down and knocked down and don't even see the light to get up and the path to get up?
Well, you know, people think of the word courage as, there's a baby in a burning building and a guy runs in to save the baby. Yes, that's courage. The courage that the firemen have, policemen. But there's another kind of courage, and that's the courage is not the absence of fear. Everybody who's courageous, that soldier in the war, Audie Murphy, who got all the medals, he was fearful constantly, probably. But the courage is to overcome fear. That's where courage really is. So in our own lives, when we have challenges, when we have things to overcome, whether it's health issues, whether it's business issues, it might be family issues, it's the courage to overcome the fear that sets in. Because the devil has a way that whenever there's a problem presented to us, the devil steps in and immediately makes us fearful, makes us worryful, makes us doubtful, makes us feel like we can't do it. That's what he does to us. But so courage, having courage, is to be able to overcome that fear and still go on and produce instead of letting it putting us into a position of being idle, of only fearful and only worryful. And so that's the way I look at courage. Courage is a human's ability to, not the absence of fear, but to face fear and still go and overcome.
And folks, the question I want to address to you, if you are inspired by this show, if you are motivated by this show to actually go to Amazon, purchase the book, the question I have for you all is, if not now, when? And I wrote this for all of you who think about things, procrastinate. I leave you with, if not now, when? Joyce, Barry, and Friends, the number one worldwide internet radio show. This poem, an original by yours truly, is entitled, If Not Now, When? We are giving you the education. We are giving you the information. We are giving you the motivation. We are giving you the inspiration. What you really need to do is to put this into application. Do you want a transformation? You must use your imagination. It might take some perspiration. It's all in the preparation. You must really be sure there is no procrastination. It helps to have a fascination and very strong determination. You want a positive demonstration, achieve success in the administration. It really is the time. Give each show your consideration. What is your aspiration? What do you need for stimulation to get healthy and off that medication? To get wealthy, it's your destination. So make today the day for your participation. If you do, congratulations. If not now, when? If not now, when, folks? So do check out that book. It is so inspiring. It's so loving. I really promise you an extraordinary read. So do check it out. Iron String, Rudy Revek, R-E-V-A-K. I just want to briefly mention just one of Rudy's global companies, and that's the company Symmetry, of which he was a founder and he is chairman. So I just want to give a shout out and let you know that shortly, in the next few weeks, we'll have a whole show about what that company offers, the products, the business opportunities. But if you want to just check it out for now, it's simplymagicwow.com, simplymagicwow. But we will be doing shows on that very, very soon. Today, we wanted to focus on this extraordinary book and the man behind it, Rudy Revek. So what message do you want to leave our audience with? What message do you want to leave them, and why should they absolutely stop everything and order this book now?
I think everybody should read the book because it's a book of disappointment, discouragement, challenges, problems. But it's also a book of hard work, desire, courage, determination, persistence, faith, and most important, love, and how all of those positives can overcome all of those negatives. That if you read this book and you see how the struggles and the hardships that my parents went through and my grandparents went through, and then say, wait a minute, I look at my life today, I have problems? No, I don't. You know,
I agree.
There's nothing compared to what they went through, and that I think that's one of the great messages that a lot of the people who've read the book come out of it with. They say, wow, look what they went through. They were willing, they could overcome that, and I'm here complaining because the weather is a little cold, or I don't have the shoes I want, or I'm not driving the car I want to drive. And so I think that's one of the great reasons to read the book. And again, another reason is to help my church out in the mission.
I think those are two very good reasons right there. And I'll add a third one, that it does make a fascinating read. Besides all the inspiration, motivation, all those things that you relate what is going on in your own life and say, my God, like Rudy said, I'm complaining about this. Look at what they went through. It is so extraordinary, the story. It's well put together. It does make a fascinating read. I strongly urge you, go to Amazon.com and get that book. And it's a great book to give as a gift. I mean, almost every call that comes in these days, people are going through so many health challenges, financial challenges. The world seems so much more difficult in this last year for a number of reasons. So we all need something, some support system to propel us forward. This book is one of those support systems. This show is another. So I do urge you to read it. Anything else you want to say, Rudy, on that?
Well, in a minute, if I may, I'll close with this. On page 165 of the book, there's a saying by George Bernard Shaw. It's this: people are always blaming their circumstances for what they are. I don't believe in circumstances. People who get on in the world are the people who get up and look for the circumstances they want, and if they can't find them, they make them. That's what this book is about, and that's what it can do for you. Fire you.
That was very powerful. Page 155, another reason to get the book, so you could really focus on 155, that page alone, and read it every day. And folks, I want to leave you with this. Well, one, I want to thank you, Rudy. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. I want to do another one, whether with you or Brandon, the president of Symmetry, about Symmetry, and really get into that one company, which I love the products, love the company. We'll do that and dedicate a whole show to it. But for now, I just want to thank you about this book. People need to know about this book, and I'll do my part in having that happen as well. And this is my special prayer for all of you. May yesterday be the last day, the very last day of your struggles, your suffering, your ill health, your misfortunes, your problems, your pain, your worries, your troubles, your trials and tribulations. May today be the first day. It is the first day of the rest of your life. May it be the beginning of the very best of your life, with extraordinary wishes granted and dreams coming true. Make this the most meaningful year of making more money, good health, good luck, good fortune, attracting special people and opportunities, creating magical memories, and manifesting marvelous miracles. And folks, we invite you to sing along with us, dance along with us, and laugh along with us. And you can do that right here, right now, to the Joyce Barry Mash. God bless you all.
I was listening to Blog Talk Radio when my ears heard something that I did know. From the speakers of my laptop I heard a voice. It was the White Oprah, also known as Joyce.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH. I felt so inspired by her show, and her poetry was just so good, you know. I want to listen to Joyce again and again. As Joyce would say, if not now, when?
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Wow.
Joyce knows all about having fun.
Wow.
She's a home business wizard and she's just begun.
Wow.
She's
wow.
a coaching sensation for not just me or
wow.
you or her. It's for everyone.
Then you can MASH.
Do the Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She's a home business smash.
Then you can MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can MASH.
Do the Joyce Barry MASH.
Wow.
Have a fantastic day and listen to Joyce Barry and Friends.